Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by The Isley Brothers, The Carpenters, The Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Do Make Say Think are an instrumental band whose members all call Toronto, Ontario home. A functioning outfit for more than 20 years, Do Make Say Think's core configuration consists of Justin Small, Charles Spearin, Ohad Benchichit, David Mitchell, and James Payment. And together, they've toured the world and released some hugely influential records. Their latest album is called Stubborn Persistent Illusions. It's out now via Constellation Records, and we'll bring the band to a city, likely near you, later this year. A couple of days after their triumphant album release show at the Danforth Music Hall in Toronto on June 10th, 2017, I went to Charlie's house where I met with him, Justin, and Ohad for a conversation about cinematic music and film scoring awards, the influence of the musical suite Pictures at an Exhibition by the Russian composer Modest Mussorgsky, generic signifiers like post-rock, how drummer Jimmy Payman almost had his foot amputated in the weeks before the aforementioned Danforth Music Hall show, how Charles must balance his duties in Broken Social Scene with those in Do Make Say Think and other things, and much, much more. Sponsored by Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, this is Do Make Say Think on the 330th episode of Creative Control with your host, me, Vish Khanna. I think for the purposes of people listening, maybe each of us should identify each other by
voice and name. I think that would be the easiest thing to do so that the, as we go, you know, you know why I would suggest such a thing. Why don't we start over here?
Okay, I'm Justin Small. This is the sound of my voice.
Welcome back to the show.
Welcome back to the show.
You've been on the show before. Why are you welcoming me back to the show?
Oh, yes. thank you for having me again. Last time was just a Skype conversation.
Yes, that's right. We did a Skype conversation because you were doing that, what was it, a song a week?
Yes, that's right.
Is that still going?
Nope. It was only for 1 year. Only a year.
One song a week for a whole year.
I actually did an extra one. It was like 53 songs. I was like, hey, wait a second. And on my last one, I was like, this is the last one. And somebody typed up and you're like, you're already done. I was like, oh, sorry. Well, one more bonus track.
Well, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, thank you.
And you, sir?
I'm Charles Spearin from the band Do Make Say Think. Nice to have you in my house, Vish.
I permit you into the country now that you've identified yourself. Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It's a lovely, lovely home.
Thanks so much.
Do you make, what do you do in this living, this is a living room sort of?
Yeah,
nook?
This is like an office living room. That's technically the living room.
Yeah, that's right. I see it now.
Tech for all the technicians.
It's got a couch and it's got a piano, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, the piano is part of the studio as well. This is kind of a studio.
Right.
This is where I mix on Pro Tools.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any outboard gear, but Ohad's got all that stuff.
Right.
Which we don't really use much outboard gear anyway. But then in the garage is the rehearsal space.
So
we all rehearse here in the garage.
The shelf showcases the fruits of his labors in this room.
Oh, yes. I see the Juno Awards and some... what is that other thing there? Are those all Juno Awards?
There's 4 Juno Awards and then some weird sculptures that I made. To try and make it look like more.
Soapstone carving.
Yeah.
Well, this is an Icelandic jazz award.
Congratulations.
This is an award for...
Oh, yes. What is that exactly?
Your spoken word record.
I took a sculpture course at Central Tech.
Oh.
And that's a maquette.
Well, it's lovely. It's a lovely home, and those are lovely sculptures. Congratulations.
Thanks very much.
And you?
Ohad Benchitrit.
Hi, Ohad. How are you?
The one with the weird name. Other than you.
What? Why are you insulting my name? Yeah, you do have a weird name. Ohad Benchitrit.
Yeah.
What is the origin of that name, if I might say?
Israeli.
Israeli, okay. Yeah. And so do people often say it wrong?
At Starbucks.
Yeah.
Oh, what do you
get? They say it wrong everywhere.
What do they say at the Starbucks?
Well, they say Chad, which freaks me out because I can't possibly look like a Chad.
Do you spell it out for them?
I just go with whatever they say.
Okay.
Well, O-H-A-D, people just assume that the C is like
the O is a C.
Overzealous.
Right, yeah. Right. Well,
yeah.
Now, you and I haven't spoken on the record in, I don't know, a long time. I went to your studio, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I guess about 8 years ago.
8 years ago, yeah. Are you still there?
Yep.
Same place?
Same place.
So you, Charlie, are saying you have stuff, that you making records for people in your home?
No, just generally the things that we all do together.
Okay.
And generally it's a really close friend. It wouldn't be somebody I don't know.
You don't have clients, per se.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Wow.
Well, except they do film soundtrack work.
Yeah.
Yes, congratulations. You two just won an award, didn't you? You and Justin? Ohad and Justin?
In the fall.
We won in the fall.
Yeah, so the LA...
Time's flying by.
Yes, I know. The LA Scream Fest.
LA Scream Fest.
Yeah, we inadvertently wrote the score to a horror film. I think they weren't...
That's a true horror film if it surprised you that you made a soundtrack for it.
No,
what's going to happen next? That's us.
It didn't surprise you that we made the soundtrack. I think it surprised everybody that it turned into like a horror movie and was celebrated as such. I think the director was intending to make kind of a Tarantino-style grindhouse.
Sure.
And he just kind of went overboard with a lot of things. And then they were like, this is a scary horror movie. And he's like, okay, you've won an award. And he's like, great.
Well, that's a weird thing. You put something out in the world and it gets received and pigeonholed in a certain way, right? Did you guys see the script go ahead? Like, did you?
No, much later than that. For this particular movie, yeah.
Do you do a bunch of film scores?
Yeah.
Kind of our primary job right now.
And it's primarily YouTube?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how did you get into that?
Mostly, I think at the beginning it was kind of through editors I would meet and they'd be like, oh, we put your music in for Temp, and they, you know.
Oh, like a Do Make Say Think?
Yeah, they Do Make Say Think music in this Temp, and we, you know, and then we hire somebody to do it. And then we're like, well, you could hire us. And then we met Bruce McDonald through Kevin. Our first movie was Idaho Peak called Idaho Peak, and we maybe did that in
2004.
Idaho Peak. Well, yeah. Whose film was that?
Aubrey Nealon is the director, and he is now has won a bunch of Canadian Screen Awards for his writing in some really popular Canadian show. I can't remember.
Okay.
Now, but I don't watch TV much, so I know he's got his job in that. But I know we got those first early gigs, I think, through Arts and Crafts, because they were like, we want Broken Social Scene to write this, and we want Leslie Feist to write this, and they went, they're too expensive. Here's Justin and Ohad. And we were like, okay. And we just ended up kind of building a client base of people that we hopefully will continue to bring us work.
Is it a thing where you see the visual images and you're trying to make music that reflects what's going on? Is that the deal?
Yeah.
That's kind of it. What are they called? The rushes? No, it's not a rush.
No, you actually have the film.
You have the film.
Or at least a rough cut.
Right.
And then at some point you need the final cut.
You're in a band that I think, because people don't know what to do with Do Make Say Things sometimes. They don't know how to talk about it. I struggle with it probably in my time. I don't know. I don't remember. Probably not. I'm good.
Yeah.
But,
my mother actually describes it best. If I can just throw in my mother's description of the band. She said, you can't sing along to it. You can't dance to it. You can't talk over it. And you can't remember it.
that's your own mother saying that. That's not good, probably.
But that's not to say she doesn't like it. She just doesn't understand.
Right.
So
I think a lot of people, when they try to describe it, they suggest it's cinematic.
Yeah.
Because there's no singing, generally.
Yeah, I mean,
you've had a couple of people guest on stuff. But that's an interesting position. Because then people take your stuff and they put it in their own movies.
Yeah, but I think the ironic thing is, The things that people will use to describe us as cinematic are the songs or the tracks on the records that they say make us cinematic are the songs they couldn't possibly actually use in a film. Because I think the stories are too vivid and the chances of it actually lining up perfectly with whatever storyline or visual in the film. So what ends up getting used are always our little like 3-minute interlude songs and the ones that they come back to over and over again. And not like the big, what we consider, I guess, the core Do Makes idea.
Sure.
Like a Freddy or a Raishula.
Yeah.
Is it the kind of reaction that you resent more than you appreciate?
No, not at all.
In the slightest.
Because I would say, if someone were to say, like, your music made me picture something.
Yeah.
Because that's what someone's saying, right?
Right.
It's cinematic. Mm-hmm. It actually triggered something else in me. Like, it made me think of something, a whole other sense. I would think you would be like, that's pretty amazing, actually, that we could make something that makes someone think of another medium.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I think that's more what they mean. They're not necessarily saying it would be great for film soundtracks. They're saying cinematic in the sense that it brings them images. And
yeah.
I agree. And I think that is a compliment, and it's a nice way to listen to music, just to try, if it transports you into some other place.
Right. Were you, in turn, as a band ever, or are you ever inspired by film, by things you see? Per se?
I mean, not as a band, maybe individuals.
Yeah.
It's not something we reference when we're writing music together.
Yeah.
We don't say. I mean, maybe we do. We reference all kinds of different things to try and, you know, talk to each other about music. There's not enough adjectives in the English language for music, so we're constantly grabbing
sure,
at different
yeah.
things to try and describe it. So definitely we'll be referencing colors and shapes and things like that.
Right.
You know, randomly grabbing at them to try and, you know, convey our ideas to each other. But it's not a, you know, we're not going to say, we didn't reference a specific film.
Oh my God, I just
saw
Spartacus.
We have a Spartacus part in one of our songs.
Do you have a Spartacus part?
Well, we call it.
We call it that. Yeah.
Why is it called the Spartacus part? What song is it?
It's kind of out of Roman kind of, I don't know, there's
it's a triumphant trumpety part.
Yeah, it just feels like, it feels like the kind of horn line you would hear in an old 1950s Hollywood film like Spartacus, or at least that's the kind of...
What song are we talking about?
Ontario Plates? Do we call it Ontario Plates?
Yeah, it's called Ontario.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's called Ontario Plates.
We have working titles for all our songs, and we end up sticking with the working titles.
Right.
And so when people refer to the actual song titles often, we can't remember what song it really is.
I sometimes think that your song titles are little inside jokes, because I don't always get them. Sometimes I do.
Yeah.
I think they're funny, but I sometimes think they're just things you guys probably talked about, or
some of it. Yeah, and a lot of the time we sort of find ourselves in a position where we're like, "Oh no, the record's coming out, and none of these songs are titled." Like, you know,
I had a very similar conversation with John McIntyre at Tortoise, where he said they don't have anything; mm-hmm. they literally have nothing until someone badgers them
to come up with the artwork. And they're like, oh, shit. Yeah, we don't have any titles for these songs. Yeah. So they just make them up like as the artwork, like the day the artwork is due. Mm-hmm. That's not you guys.
Half. But we badger ourselves until we run out of time. Yeah. We still don't end up doing it.
Oh, we make an effort to try and come up with titles, but it's basically we will never agree on a title until we have to, you know?
You let go of the thing and the titles get ascribed with all this meaning from idiots like me, right?
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, they called it this. It must mean something amazing. And you're just like, just get that out of
Just send it to them.
Just send them the artwork. It's fine.
No, there is a middle ground. Actually, a lot of the titles do have meanings to us. And that's why it takes us a long time to try and find words that will sort of suit the sound of the song as well as kind of what we're hoping to portray with it. So it's not, they're not just random collections of words, which, you know, well, maybe some of them are. I'm not going to say which ones, but we really do try to have as much kind of emotional content in the music, and the title can obviously sort of add to that.
Yeah, sure.
Like the math equation on the new album.
Yeah.
That's complicated. I can't even remember the equation.
Neither do we. But basically, it's the distance to the horizon.
Right.
It's how far you can see, depending on how high you are off the ground.
Is this, I know there's, from what I read, I haven't talked to you guys about this, but my understanding is that some of the motifs for this record were inspired by a poem, is that right?
The whole idea was inspired by the poem, or at least we talked really, really early on about a concept, and we fooled around with the concept for forever, not really ever dialing it in, and I think we were just starting to use it as an excuse to get into the rehearsal space again and go, okay, well, if we just keep writing, it'll coalesce later and we'll figure out what the concept is. And we kept moving and moving it. But towards the very end, I think that's what, it skirted around something we've been talking through the whole time, but never really had touched on in a very specific way. And then the poem was just something that I think it got brought up pretty early on. And
it did.
Then abandoned. And then we, but the one thing that we kind of came back to was this idea of pictures at an exhibition and just liking the way the music tied into every painting. There's a journey, a walking theme. And so the poem was one of our ways to do what we thought was really musically wonderful about that piece of music. And and then at the end, I think it started coming together. And then our song titles, which never happened before, they actually started getting written around the idea. So they weren't as random as they may have been on other records.
So the idea was inspired by a poem. And I want to find out more about the poem in just a moment. But then you're saying that as you were more inspired, it went from just the poem to this notion of like traveling around a museum? Or gallery? Did I get that all wrong?
Yeah,
okay, great. Yeah. I'm glad I got that all wrong. I was trying to unpack what you said there.
Ohed's referring to Pictures at an Exhibition by Modest Mussorgsky. The classical
poem
piece.
The
poem is not related to that.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay.
We were looking for a way. I'm sorry, we're talking amongst. We've been through this with each other so many times.
Myself included, there's people listening and myself included that don't exactly know what you're talking about. So that's why I just want to clarify.
The idea...
I'm a good host.
You're a fantastic host.
You are. We're not the most articulate guys.
No.
But the idea of Pictures at an Exhibition by Modest Mussorgsky is a really simple, beautiful way of presenting a narrative through music.
Okay.
It starts with the trumpet line, which is called the walking theme. And then it goes on to describe a painting,
and then
it comes back to the walking theme. And it's basically Mussorgsky walking through a picture, an exhibition of his dead artist's work.
I see, okay.
Dead artist friend's work. His dead artist.
His dead artist he owned at the time.
Anyway, so it's just a really simple way because it describes an internal mood and then it describes a painting. And then it describes the mood and then the painting. And then they kind of blend together. And at the end, it's this beautiful description of a painting. And then you realize by the end of it that he's not describing the painting anymore. He's describing his love for his friend.
Oh, I see.
So triumphant. It's just such a simple concept for a piece of music. And we were looking for something like that that could be could take our music on a bit of a journey like that.
I see.
The poem was something that we had kind of tossed around early, just the sense of how daydreams can float away. You can have these different thoughts about, you know, your life, your past, your future, anything like this. And we had, you know, earlier on we had thought about, you know, the idea of each song being a different person, maybe how they're viewing a certain the same incident.
Oh, I see,
you know?
Right, right.
And we went through all kinds of different potential storylines, and some of them
were too dark.
Some of them were too dark or too heavy, and yeah. Some of them were too complicated to really present. You know, we needed something simple. And this poem, which is, it's not the whole poem at all. It's one line from a poem. It's a Buddhist poem about essentially a meditation technique. But the line in the poem is...
lose your mind to something outside, be like the ship captains watching her crow fly. When nowhere to alight on the boundless sea, return again.
Something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good memory, Justin. That was great, yeah.
So the image is basically if you're on a boat crossing the ocean with a crow on the boat with you. And the crow can take off and go as far as it wants, but eventually it has to circle back and come back to the boat.
Right.
So the idea is similar with thoughts. Your thoughts can go off and daydream about whatever, but eventually they come back to being where you are in your ordinary life and your mundane life, and there's this kind of sense of returning and going off and returning, but ultimately your daydreams do have to come back to your life.
And this resonated with all of you, clearly. I mean, who found this poem?
The guy who couldn't remember it.
Yeah.
Right, but it resonated enough with you to recite it almost from memory.
Well, yeah, and it's also going to be asked of me a lot.
Right.
Because that's... You know, we put that out as the idea of the record, and it's on the record.
Sure.
And I felt that it was important to kind of, you know, I when it was, when we moved in that direction, then yeah, I was interested in its concept because, like they were, like Charlie and Ohad were saying, you know, we were trying, we really wanted to do something different this time around and have the concept locked down, but the songs would just be, you know, going its natural way. Like Do Makes Right, they just, and then they just, you know, they have their own voice, and then their wisdom is sort of, it gets imparted later,
sure.
You know? And so when Charlie had that, I was like, you know what? Sold. We got to get this thing done. I'm into it.
I gather that it was just something that you... No, I don't want to say you stumbled upon it, but it was an idea that struck you at a time that when you were contemplating this band and what you were going to do next. But is there anything about the notion that you just described, Charlie, that speaks to the trajectory of the band and where you are right now together, or where you are in life? Well, this notion of being able to leave, but you having this thing that you always home back to. I mean, that's a fascinating concept at some point, on some level, particularly as some of us enter midlife.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Have children, you start to really think about, you know, what it means to have a home and a home base, particularly, you know, you guys travel a lot as well as musicians. So I'm now trying to apply a lot of meaning to a thing that maybe just seemed cool.
No, believe me. Really,
we had
whether or not it comes through, I like to think it does, but we talked about it and we thought about it and we tried to find something that was meaningful for us as this record. Because we put everything we have into writing the music.
Yeah.
And so we want to present it in a similar way. And so we talked about life and we talked about death and we talked about our hopes and we really, really did get into it. You know, the music in a way is kind of like trying to describe all of the aspects of life, and it's an impossible goal, but we want to, you know, touch on joy, we want to touch on sadness, we want to touch on fear, we want to touch on all these things that life is, and put that into the music, and this sort of theme of, because you're right, we're in the middle of our lives right now, we're in our 40s, so we have lots of memories to look back at, and we can lose ourselves in our memories, and we also have a lot of life ahead of us, so we can be constantly looking at, you know, what, you know, the decisions we're making now still have a lot of potential to go in different ways. So
we're responsible, I mean, myself included, we're responsible for other people's lives
more than
the first half, maybe, yeah.
So it is very much kind of being in the middle of the ocean and you know, daydreaming about this and that and worrying about this and that. Yeah. But eventually, you know, you always have to come back to the practical details of life. And,
right.
and It's not to say that the boat is a prison in the middle of the ocean, because, you know, you can leave, but there's a sort of a anchoring quality to it.
Right.
Where,
and I think the concept, even though it came late, the act of constantly searching for it is almost like the crow flying. Every time we'd get together, we'd have a concept. It'd go out, it'd come back, we'd go, that's not quite it. But the discussions and just the thinking about it and the trying to put it together, it kept us motivated, it kept us writing, it kept us... And we even did things which forced our hand. We incorporated musical motifs, which we've never done before, in multiple songs throughout the record. We've never done that before, where we reused a theme in, I think, 3 to 4 songs.
Yes, recurring kind of...
Yeah, and that was even though the concept wasn't kind of laid out as crystal clear as we'd like, it was a way of forcing us to stay on that path. It was a way of forcing us to keep moving forward with that idea. And the conversation were just as important as writing the songs.
Yeah. So. At the beginning, right from the beginning, we had to decide to make a record because we had made so many records and we loved them. And we were proud of them. But we didn't, we didn't want to have just another record. Why are we making a record? It's just to make a record. And so we really, we struggled from the beginning to try and find some meaning to put into this music. And the struggle, and the funny thing is the meaning didn't really come until the end.
Sure.
It's like the intention came at the end of the record, which is doesn't make any sense, but that's how it feels.
Sometimes that's the way it works, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned a few things there, but I want to speak to the fact that, as far as I can tell, it's been... What has it been, 8 years since your last record, right?
That's what people are saying.
Yeah, 2009, so yeah.
2009.
That's what people are saying? Is there something that we're missing?
No, I don't know. We're not counting.
People are like, said it, like I've read these little things, that a decade since their last release, 7 years since their last release, and I'm just kind of...
You don't know what the number is. So everyone is counting. When a band takes a break, a public break, people wonder what precipitated this gap. They view it as a gap. Mm-hmm. Whereas, I happen to know all of you do other things, and... weren't dormant, but at the same time, I can tell by how much thought you put into what this was going to be, this record, and why are we even doing this? Like, you had a philosophical discussion, essentially. There is some weight to that time now, even just sitting here with you. Can you talk a little bit about what was going on in that 9 years, decade-long span?
Babies have been born, like...
Life.
Yeah, we basically, at the end of it, Justin was a few years away from being a dad. Me and Charlie had one each and just two new ones, pretty much.
Yeah, right.
So, and then social scene and other music, other requirements. And and I think also after other two, not necessarily because of the record, but leading up to the record, it just got to the point where we felt like everything else was taking us in different directions. We had done, at that point, 6 records, pretty much 2 years apart. Every 2 years we put out a record. And I think it was just a natural slowdown, and not necessarily a hard stop or an accident.
Well, the melodrama in the curiosity, if you will, from people like me, I guess, or just people as external to the band, is like, was it close to not coming back?
Yep.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't think we were making this record.
I didn't think so either.
I didn't even think we were making this record till about 3 years into making the record.
Yeah.
Has it been 3 years?
No, after we started. We weren't even really sure that it was... Like, we had started working on it and getting together and writing. Yeah. But even after 3 years of doing that, we weren't sure that we were actually going to finish.
Right.
It was...
Because on some level, this is a social thing, right?
Yeah, I think we started...
It's a creative thing, but it's this... You like each other. You like hanging out with each other.
Yeah.
So any excuse to do that, I assume, whether it turns into something for people that consume.
Sometimes the jams are kind of annoying.
Believe me, at the end of the last show of Other Truths tour, we were pretty ready to take a break from each other for a while.
Oh yeah,
was that in Japan?
Taiwan.
Taiwan
was the last show that I, in my mind.
Anyway. Oh, man. I hear this on the show all the time. Taiwan does bands in. They just can't. Why are we doing this?
I think
what was starting to happen, at least from my perspective, as I was as a witness to it, was that, I think, we sort of move and we evolved in this sort of natural pace. Like, how we make our music and how we want... And there was never really this desire within the band. I think after maybe History and Rust, we just realized that, you know, we're not going to catch like Arcade Fire, or we're not going to catch like even Broken Social Scene. We're just going to be in this world.
Catch meaning?
And like just
become
like bigger,
basically, and really make a living off
it. Yeah, make a living. Like, we weren't really.
You thought you'd commercially plateaued.
Well, no, we just, and other than really, really just being on the road all the time, making money from Do Makes Me Think, like as a living, was going to be a little bit more of a challenge. Right. And for our 20-year-old selves, that was fine because that was kind of our identity.
Yeah.
Like we were, in the Toronto music scene, and we had girlfriends that then became wives, and then they were cool wives. They dated musicians, but then we had children, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh man, 3 months in Europe and coming back with like $1,000, can't cut it. Mm-hmm. You can't go back to your wife like that. So,
right.
You know, and I think at the end of Other Truths, it was just kind of a. I think the people were just sort of burnt out on the genre within ourselves. I mean, at least I was. I was just, I wasn't listening to post rock anymore, and I was just.
Do you identify with this term? Because I saw it pop up in descriptions of your music.
I choose to ignore it.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I'll call it post rock.
You would? Yeah, okay. I just wonder. I've talked to other people who supposedly make this kind of music and they bristle.
I think it offended us at first, and then it was just convenient for record store employees a corner to put stuff in. And in a way, it does describe kind of instrumental rock music. That's probably maybe a better term, but the term itself is more of a convenience than anything else.
Oh, Ed, when you say you ignore it.
When I say ignore it, I mean basically what Charlie was saying, the idea that it's just used as an easy way to describe something. Just put it in a box.
Yeah. Okay.
We don't have to talk about it anymore.
You're not offended by it, per se, in terms of how it's your music.
No.
I found it really interesting, though. There's a post-rock subreddit.
Yes.
You did an AMA.
Yes.
And I saw a discussion on where we sit in the history of post-rock. Apparently, we're second wave.
Oh,
we're part of the second wave.
So rock is just dead.
Rock had died. Godspeed and Tortoise killed it.
Okay.
Right.
And then we saw Godspeed and Tortoise and went, that's cool. And Mogwai and us
were second wave.
Came in through the second door. And
how
then
many doors are we at?
And then the third door was Explosions in the Sky and Mono.
Sure.
And that's where the discussion turned into the third wave is now feedbacking. It hasn't, the music is having a hard time evolving past the, what they are now calling crescendo core.
Yes, I've heard that.
I've heard it, crescendo
core.
Sorry,
I don't mean to laugh at it.
No.
I don't want to end up on one of these subreddits being made fun of. But
So if you're in a crescendo core band, that's okay. We're not really. But apparently, as Stubborn Persistent Illusions has proved in this community that we bypass the dreaded crescendo core still. At second waivers, we can still.
Is this the Reddit now? I'm having trouble following this thread. Is there a way to refresh?
I found it a very interesting conversation that feel like joining in.
Well, you could have as a member
of the second wave.
Second wave, yes. Second wave's not bad. It's not the first wave, but it's not bad. You're right there. You're right there. I attended your show at the Danforth Music Hall on Saturday. Congratulations, it was amazing.
Thank you.
The lighting, everything. Who did that? Who did all the lighting
stuff?
His
name is Bryce Kushner, and he was a guy I worked with at Sonic Boom, and then he actually filled in on a couple tours with us.
Saxophone
and keyboard. He played keyboard a bit.
He has a project called Vitamins for You, which I don't know if they're still.
I don't think he's doing that anymore.
That was his project for a while.
Is it a health food store?
Nope. That was his.
It's an actual band?
Sounds like a
health food store.
It is a health food store in Winnipeg.
It is? Okay.
Where he's from.
Okay. Yeah, so it's an homage to the health food store.
Yeah, and so it was electronic. He does, I think, drone performances and such stuff, but now I think he's really focused in on this lighting thing. He's been doing it mostly for electronic acts. And so I saw something he had posted a couple months back that looked really cool, and I asked him if he wanted to do the show. And
so
I,
he did,
got
like
super excited, and
there were orbs. There were like orbs behind all the amps, basically. There were five orbs, and then there was like a strobe light line that would come on, or not a strobe light. It looked like fluorescent light.
Yeah, fluorescent.
Yeah, and it would light up recurringly, and if you weren't careful, you might get dizzy.
Yeah,
and it was very dark, and there were film projections, and some of it was live of you guys.
Yeah,
on, but all distorted, snow.
Well, they were nighttime Night vision. Cameras he had on stands that were in front of us and kind of tucked in between us.
Blending
them. And he was just blending them.
So like, how... I know you haven't played... That was your first show in a while, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How long has it been?
We played the island a year ago.
That was 2 years ago.
2015. Wavelength?
For the Wavelength.
Yeah, okay.
Camp Wavelength.
But was that your first time doing that kind of production? Like the thing you did at the Danforth with the lighting and the...
Yeah.
Well, we've had film backing.
Oh, no. I mean, was that your first time working with Brett? Like,
Yeah. Okay. And I thought it was great. I mean, I got lost in it at one point and kind of misstepped a part of my own. And I just look over to see how I was like, are you going to drive me, man? His eyebrows are raised. He's got to go now. Play now.
The show in your estimation, was a success. Did you enjoy the show?
Oh, yeah.
Given how prepared we were able to get, not because of scheduling, we just didn't have the time we would have liked to put into preparing for it. So it was a perfect blend of unpreparedness that created nerves that got us just...
Near terror.
But something when things are going right, and if you don't have any catastrophe to build on, that kind of being on the edge actually really helps.
When terror sort of tips into euphoria, it's kind of like...
I noticed that you actually, at one point, you spoke. And you, prior to that, I noticed you were jumping up and down. And I could tell, like, the release had happened in that piece, and then you had to say something.
Yeah.
That was the first song, too, because it was, like, it's a new one.
Yeah.
And performing it live can be tricky because there's a lot of sort of moves that happen. Sure. And you need to hear a lot of things, and it's what, you know, however long it is, you can get, like, 9 minutes into that song and be like, oh, no, I forget the part, you know?
Yeah.
9 minutes into a song. And we didn't do a very good job of doing it at soundcheck.
Pretty bad.
We played it pretty horribly at soundcheck. And we were like, this is... And so I think I was actually... When we went into the next song, Fredericia, I think I must have been holding my breath. Because I was like... I felt like this rush, like... And I felt like lightheaded.
Oh wow!
And I was like, "Oh my god!" I don't think I was breathing through that whole song. I mean, it was like really, like just tense. Like just super tense. And then I was like, "We did it!"
It was hard to see that because of the lighting. You guys were kind of mostly backlit, so I couldn't see your faces. But Charlie started bouncing up and down. I'm like, "Oh, there's something's going on." Like they're feeling it now on stage. You said terror, O-head. And someone said terror. You said barring any catastrophe, we have to talk about the catastrophes that led up to this show because I think they're significant.
Jimmy.
What do you mean, oh Jimmy? The guy. Now that we tell the story,
now he's fine.
Oh my god!
Yeah, another show.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everybody's totally fine. We're like, oh.
Justin, you made a point of telling the story during some banter, but yeah, Ohad, I want to hear Ohad's perspective on it, just because.
Well, I think Jimmy and Justin are so close. They're like brothers.
Okay,
I think he's the best one. Like, we call them the odd couple because they talk like they're married,
right?
In the band, or they fight like they're married.
You have this show at the Danforth planned. It's a big album release show.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us, rather. What happened?
And leading up to the getting that show was kind of important because Charles's relationship with Broken Social Scene and finding the correct date, like, you know, it had to happen pretty early on once we got it. That was an important part of the summer, you know, like on everybody's calendar. On Mother's Day, Jimmy, who works at the 3-Speed, Mother's Day brunch, they're apparently their busiest day. Before a shift, dropped a pot of boiling water on his foot, And because the other chef that works there was home for Mother's Day, because she's a mother, she's right. a young mother, I think it might have been her first, too. She's like, I didn't want her to miss her first Mother's Day right. kind of thing. So he toughed it out and finished the shift. And, you know, one of the guys in the opening band, Ben from Mimico, works with him. And apparently he was telling me that he was just being stubborn. They were all like, go home, man. Like, you know, but he was like, I got to do it. And then he came to do
makes. Does he do this kind of thing normally? Is Jimmy like a guy that won't treat himself if he's not feeling well, or
he's got this? We both come from Ajax.
Oh, and he comes from say no more. Yeah, I understand. This is a pure Ajax Ontario story. Yeah, okay, I understand. No, sorry.
And you know, it's that sort of, you know, he played hockey growing up. Yeah. And it was like just that sort of like, come on, man, you can tough this out. Like, sure. I can do this. So
walk it off.
You know, walk it off. And he walked it off and he walked it into, a Doom Mix rehearsal, because we didn't have so very few of them right. leading up to the show. And then at the end of the Doom Mix rehearsal, I remember us going like, hey, dude, I think you should probably go to the hospital. Like, you know, that's pretty serious. You burned your foot and it blistered up and, you know, you're playing drums. So he went to a walk-in clinic the next day, not the hospital. I think it's an important distinction right here is that he walked into a walk-in clinic and got annoyed at the wait time and went home and went to his metal band's rehearsal that night uh-huh. in which he plays double kick. And so, so he got an infection. He woke up that night and
his foot was a watermelon.
Septic shock kind of thing?
Well, not yet.
Okay. Now, sorry, I didn't mean to jump ahead.
It's important at this point to let you know that we do love Jimmy.
No.
I want you to understand.
I do appreciate
that,
this. Yeah.
But he, they told him he had to go to the Sunnybrook burn set unit, and he had lots of stuff to do, I guess. And he waited 2 more days, and so this would be 4 days after the initial burn, uh-huh. and he walked into Sunnybrook, and they were like, "Oh my God, you've gone septic, and it's gone up your leg, and it's all like it's reached his, you know."
You could lose your foot.
You could lose your foot. We're going to cut off your foot.
Amputate the foot.
Amputate your foot. And he called me up and he was like, he was really upset. And I was like, I was really shocked. And immediately I was like, well, we got to cancel the show. Like, we have to cancel because it's like 2.5 weeks away.
Right.
You know? And people are going to travel to the show and all that kind of stuff. And we waited and waited and kind of waited to make the call. And I guess that, you know, surgeons are kind of people who it's like a feather in their cap to get this guy on the stage. They're going to do it. Yeah. And so that's the word we got was these guys were going to try and get Jimmy on stage.
Rockstar surgeons.
They're going to patch this dude up and he's going to get up on stage and play the Danforth Music Hall. And so they patched him up.
They took a 4x8 inch, like, piece from the skin of his
leg.
Skin graft, and put it on his foot where the skin had been destroyed.
Oh my God.
And it was, you know, it was a major surgery but it was two weeks before the show was the surgery.
Yeah.
2 weeks or so before the show, and everybody was saying, you know, if it looks good, we don't need to cancel the show, everything's fine.
Yeah.
And so he got out of the hospital, he was riding around on his bicycle, he was...
Which he shouldn't have been doing. Which
right.
Did. Yeah. Riding his bicycle in the rain.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, riding the subway, you know. And then, you know, I asked him, I said, why did you ride the subway? Like, to this doctor's appointment they had to go to. And he goes, oh, they want me to walk around on it, you know, so to get blood in it. I said, it's healthy for me to be walking around on it. And it's just a bandage. You know, he's just got this flip-flop and a bandage on it. I said, but on the subway, you know.
Yeah. It's some bad stuff on the subway.
There's some bad stuff on the subway.
Yeah.
Right. So he ended up getting it infected again. So on Thursday, he had to go back into the hospital.
The show's Saturday.
And the show's Saturday. And right. so we... You know,
we actually had... Don't forget the part where we literally had to intervene, all of us, at the rehearsal.
Tell him.
Semicircle and... Have Marv drive him.
Marv is our manager.
Yeah. Adam Harvey.
And then you're going to the hospital. Like, it was 10 minutes where we're all just surrounding him going, you are going to the hospital.
Could you see that it was him?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. He had been there earlier that day.
Oh, you could tell.
Because they're checking on it. And they had noticed an infection coming back. And they drew a black marker around the edge of that infection. And then about an hour into the jam, we were sitting outside. And he's got his foot up. And he's like, what do you think? And I'm like... That's about 4 inches from the marker just on this rehearsal.
Right.
So you gotta go. And he's like, oh, I'll go tomorrow morning. Okay, you know, we'll just finish a couple of songs. We're like, no, Jim. No.
You're going to go now.
No, you're going now. Yeah, and you're right. not going to, you know, your clinic. Adam's going to take you to the burn unit at Sunnybrook, like,
right.
where they know you and they can expect you. And
right.
And then even all the way to Friday. Friday, he was, I'm not sure they're going to let me out tomorrow for the show. Because he had to have aggressive antibiotic treatment to treat this infection. And they, so we had the drummer from Mimico, Nick Curvin, come sit in on a rehearsal.
On the Friday.
We were saying to him, and I was like, Nick, we're just going to run through this. We can take a moment. And
we can say bye to Ohad.
Ohad has to go grab the kids.
Ohad, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Sorry you have to leave, but we could see you.
See you, Ohad.
This has happened on the show before.
So, someone
has to leave. Yeah, that's fine.
That's fine.
I don't take it personally. Should I take it personally?
No.
It's not my fault.
These kids would be standing outside of the school going, thank you, Dad.
No, it's good.
Yeah. I think you offended him, though.
Well, we stood in a semicircle and told him he had to go. That's basically, we sat here and we made him go.
We had an intervention with him.
You have to go pick up your kids. Sorry.
So we had Nick Curvin come sit in.
Yeah.
And basically, because we had such a limited time, I said to Nick, we're just going to run through the set, and I'm going to point at you. when I think we're going to need you to come in,
uh-huh.
and we won't set you up on a drum set, we'll set you up with a little percussion station, and you can do this, because there's a few things that, you know, Dave...
You have two drummers.
You have two drummers, but they do, you know, there's only a few, like, there's a lot of things that, that Jimmy and Dave do that are, like, syncopated rhythms, and that are kind of important, or big cymbal swells that, you know, introduce new parts. And poor Nick was probably, he was just sitting there like with his hands on his cheeks as I was pointing at him. I was like, you know, this part is, you know, 10 minutes later, this part, you know. And then the whole, I don't know if you remember at the show, at the whole end of our show, like the end part was four songs blended. Like,
yeah, that's right.
Went right through them.
Yeah.
So we started playing that, and I guess Nick was, you know, and then Jimmy walked into the rehearsal in the middle of all that, and we were kind of mix of like, what are you doing here? Like, escape? Did you leave the hospital without them? Like, are you doing this?
Are you jaywalking?
And so he came and sat down and started playing. He played the rest of those songs. At the end, Nick was like, thank God you're here. And basically what he said was they had to let him go because there was an industrial accident somewhere and they needed the beds. And so they just gave him these sort of horse pill
antibiotics
that make him feel real weird. But there he was at the show.
He played the show.
And he played amazing at
the
show.
Yeah. And but, what happened after the show?
We drank a lot.
He's not allowed.
No, where is he?
He's just got home from the hospital now.
He went back to the hospital afterwards,
and basically this time the antibiotics are working fine.
Okay.
And
now he doesn't have to be a hero about anything. Yeah. Right. He can stay home and relax and heal himself.
Yeah.
Okay. It was
a little bit scary. I mean, and we really actually did have a short window of rehearsal, and in fact we had exactly zero rehearsals with everybody in attendance. We did, you know, Mike Barth, the trumpet player, came for sound check. So we were pretty tense to play the new songs and even remember the old songs. So
Other than knowing this and hearing you articulate it on stage, it didn't come across.
Well, again, that's the thing, is when you're, I think it, in a way it helped, because nervousness does get transformed into excitement and you know, a certain amount of joy. And that's certainly how I felt on stage.
Yeah.
Like, there was all this nervous energy, and I looked out at the audience and they just looked beautiful. All these smiling faces and these hands up. And I looked around at the band and I'm like, I love these people. You know, here we are making music that we love. People together that we love, four people that we love. There's nothing wrong here. This is excellent. And I felt this kind of just, you know, complete relief. And
me too.
Yeah.
And then Bryce was like lighting it up, and it was also cool.
It was awesome.
That's the thing that's, you know, because I know I made a big speech about being uncool and how fun it is and liberating now it is to be in your 40s in a post-rock band.
Yeah.
And be really, you know, like play six string fretless basses with like no irony involved, right. Like zero irony.
Why are you always bringing up the six string fretless bass?
Because like, it's cool, but it's not cool. But it's cool. You know what I'm saying?
Rick Danko made it kind of cool.
Yeah,
from the band, he was kind of cool. But then there's a prog rock connotation. Like,
yeah.
King Crimson and whatnot, but just
close your eyes.
You just gotta close your eyes, man.
Feel the waves of sound, man.
Well, you know, in the context of what we've been talking about in terms of a philosophical understanding of what the band means to you and how long it's existed, it was fascinating watching you on stage grappling with the knowledge that it was almost done. Like an era might, if Jimmy wasn't there or if Jimmy couldn't continue, like that really informed that show for me.
Wow.
This like notion that celebrating you were celebrating the fact that you were not only kind of back, so to speak,
right,
but that you're able to continue, like, mm-hmm. That's got to be a weird feeling, like, because I did get the sense from particularly Justin's banter that you guys are in a reflective mood about Do Make Say Think. You were talking about 20 years ago we played with King Cobb Steely and mm-hmm. You know, you were talking about someone called insinuated you might be a prog rock band. Yeah. And you know, then you're one of your guys almost can't make it. I mean, that's got to be a weird thing to be in a band this long and contemplate its mortality.
I didn't put it that way. I mean, I think for me it was just the focus had it. I you know, once we got hit the stage, I think my main goal was like ultra focus. And then as the songs kind of went past and they were sounding good, and not only were they sounding good, we were playing them excellently, I thought, you know, like people were doing, and then even, I think every song started to get more and more like relaxed sound and like more, just like, I almost felt like everybody went, we're doing it! Like, we did this one! You know, and we got to the finish line, we're going to win the race! You know, like, we really got to win the race this time!
There's such a gap between that practice rehearsal mode and the show, isn't there? Like, there's so much uncertainty, so much. I think some people maybe who don't play music don't realize how much uncertainty is in that gap between, you know, we didn't quite get it. Yeah. When you walk on stage and you say you had a kind of a rough sound check, that's a weird feeling. Like your adrenaline's going, your muscle memory and your adrenaline are maybe fighting with each other.
the first thing that happened too was we're gonna tell you this intro tape, and we go out and press the sampler and the lights go down and we're like, it's gonna be really dramatic and cool, and we played like a loop that's appears in half, like halfway through one of the songs.
Press the wrong button
and we're like, all right, here we go.
That probably in a weird way calms you down. All right, we made our first mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is next for the band? What is, I mean, Jimmy's obviously got to recover.
Yes.
Totally. And then what happens with Do Makes, I Think?
We're working on booking a few shows in November. Really, we're kind of, it's unfortunate. We had really tried or hoped to have this record out last year. And because last year was much more open in the calendar department, at least for me, and I think for...
I wonder about this, Troy, because I feel like you alluded to this during our talk that you were with Broken Social Scene. Or maybe that was before we started rolling, I can't remember. But anyway, this Broken Social Scene record's coming out.
Yes, it's coming out in July, which is terrible timing. I mean, I had 3 or 4 years of essentially, you know, making pottery and going to art school and like, you know, just kind of like, just... looking at my watch,
sort
wondering what's going to happen. Yeah. Sort of downtime. Being a dad, you know, I really enjoyed it. But then all of a sudden, you know, the plan was, in my mind anyway, was to have the Do Makes I Think record come out in 2016 and we could tour it and release it.
Right.
And then the Broken Social Scene record would come out. But there was actually a moment when they were both scheduled to come out on the same day.
Well, that wasn't cool.
But thanks to the benefit of so many conflicting opinions, Broken Social Scene's record release got delayed until July. So at least there's some overlap.
Right.
But basically, Broken Social Scene is a larger machine in terms of its touring schedule and planning and all that. So we basically...
And income.
And income, we're working around Broken Social Scene's schedule right now. So when there's a gap, when we know that Social Scene's not going to be touring, then we will take that opportunity. And right now it's looking like November.
November
is the time
for that. But as you're talking about this and saying, like, you know, if to reflect on what you were just saying about it, oh, this year, record could have come out a year ago, I don't think it would have been the same record. I think that year was a crazy year in all of our lives that informed how we mixed this record and then informed how we got Marianne Collins to do the artwork. And then, you know, as unfortunate as the timing is with Broken Social Scene and us, I think that the record ultimately benefited. You know, we may not get to do as much touring, don't really care.
Everything kind of happened for a reason.
Yeah, I would rather have it be... I can't imagine that year not... the extra year it took to finish this record not having a profound impact on the way it sounds currently.
I know what you mean.
I don't think it would.
I don't think... I'm not really speaking artistically. I'm just speaking in terms of, like...
Darn it.
Planning. It would have been nice if it came
Well, you know what, though? Last year was a banner year for Ohad and I, too, in our film score. If we had taken that off to do touring, we might not be in the position that we're in
and
right
now. And you
were
doing your Song a Week project, which was a home rock.
Like, yeah, well, I had like 50 subscribers then.
No, but you still, that was something you were doing for your own.
Yeah,
that was a project. You had to do it. And Charlie, you were working with Gordani on the Secret Cast.
Gordani and I toured with Feist after the Broken Social Scene. So, I mean, I've been, you know...
on this tour?
With Metals.
Oh, so, the last record. That's right.
So
yeah.
It's been, you know, I have been involved in lots of other stuff. But, yeah, I think Do Makes I Think has kind of become, since we've been around for so long, we're kind of everybody's back burner project.
Mm.
It's something that's always kind of cooking there in the back. But they're like, you know, Ohad and Justin have their film score work, which is more important in terms of income and family kind of time.
But in your hearts, in your core,
in your
Do Make Say Think people.
I'm always
no matter what you're doing, you're really the guy from Do Make Say Think. The guys from Do Make Say Think.
Yes, and also the best Do Make Say Think cover band in the world.
Yes, I've heard you. I've heard you say this.
We make these records, and then we go, oh crap, we have to play this.
Right,
you sit around listening to the record going, who plays that part again? What is that?
You record chunks of stuff and then you kind of have to sort of piece it together a lot of the times. Is that right? Like you do a lot of like post?
A lot of the songwriting's in the post, I think.
I would say.
I'd say we get a skeleton and then we...
Yeah.
You know, it was unfortunate because one of my favorite songs on the record... you know, that kind of changes, but there's a song called Horripilation.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, when we dropped that in Toronto, like when we first booked the show, I'm like, oh, it's going to be so killer. And as the date got closer and we realized the reality of our schedules meant that there weren't going to be a whole lot of rehearsals or, you know, then that song, like I just would listen to it and get really sad because I knew we wouldn't have the time to put into it.
There's so many overdubs and so many parts.
So much work to that song in the post that to pull it off live would take... like at least 3, if not 4, rehearsals on that alone.
Right.
You know,
just to get it close.
Just to get it to a close. Yeah. And so, I had
more people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so you know, and so I had to kind of maybe you know come into those realizations. It's a tough one sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Kind of. Yeah.
When you have to learn yourself. Like I mean, I understand when bands are kind of they write the songs and then they get performances.
Yeah.
And so then after they make the record, they're like, oh, yeah, we've performed this song 1,000 times.
Right.
We can play this, you know.
Right.
That's not our case. We don't do that, so.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, I was saying that Do Make Say Think has kind of become a back burner project, but I do have to say that there is an enormous, enormous amount of pride that we have in this project.
Like, no,
we
absolutely.
Really do. We really do. It is, in a way, you said it's kind of our core, but it really is central to kind of who we've become as musicians over the last 20 years. It really is a big part of it.
I will say, having not seen you in a few years, like I was just overwhelmed by the talent of this band. Like just everyone in the band is so high caliber as a player and you know, watching some of you switch onto guitar and bass and just watching Ohad play or hearing what he comes up, it's ridiculous. Like
He's crazy at guitar, huh? You're all
particular, and the two drummers, you know, you got your Grateful Dead, you got your Fugazi, you got your Pavement, whoever's got two drummers, but you guys with the two drummers, it's unbelievable. So anyway, I don't mean to end this on a full gush, but I'm happy you're doing stuff, and it was great to see you play. And the new record is available on Constellation.
Yes,
Constellation Records.
Of course. Yep. CSTRecords.com if people want to go to a website.
Yep. Yeah.
And do you guys have a thing? You have a website, don't you?
We do.
Yeah, domakesanything.com.
It seems It needs an update.
It's been updated, but it's really not.
I didn't see it there, actually. I was looking for it before.
Oh, it's all that, all the album cover and like links to media stuff.
It's there?
It's there. You can go to domakesanything.com and hear the new record.
It's not very well maintained or right. Like we don't have a constant gardener to take care of.
Sure.
You know,
who has the password for the website?
I don't know.
Adam.
Your manager, okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Manager slash trumpet player.
Slash trumpet player,
and
yeah.
He has somebody. He's got a person.
Oh, okay.
They're out west.
I didn't mean the person.
I know, and I think it's
and
a
I think
great
they
design.
Did a pretty good job.
Yeah. Oh, it's a nice save. I just was looking for your Danforth Music Hall details, because I was like, when are they on stage? And I didn't... I'm just complaining. I'm doing a kind of a Yelp review of your website. I didn't mean to do that. Is there a song from the new record that we can play for people right now that one of you can choose?
How about Horripilations? That's the one Justin was talking about.
Yeah, imagine us playing this live.
But will you ever play it live? Or
yeah.
I'm really excited to have four pianos on stage.
All right, well, this is it. Justin and Charlie and Ohad and Winnie the dog. Winnie's...
Hi, Winnie.
Winnie wants something. Thank you so much for being on the show. And it's, like I say, I'm so happy you're back, so to speak, and best of luck with everything.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Let's dedicate this to Jimmy and his voice. That's probably important.
Okay.
Yeah. Although, honestly, I have to admit, his personality suits a peg leg pretty damn well.
You were saying that.
That was Horripilation by Do Make Say Think from their excellent new record, Stubborn Persistent Illusions. Thank you to Ohad and Charles and Justin of Do Make Say Think for having me over to Charles' house and talking about their band. That was fun. I hope it was informative for you. And fun. Also fun for you. This is the 330th episode of the Creative Control Podcast, which is available on all your finer podcast platforms, iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, and more. Every single episode of the show is also available on my website, which you can visit. It's vishkana.com. We're also, Creative Control that is, also on Facebook. You can like our page and follow us there. You can also follow us on Twitter, at vishcreative. I'm at vishkana. And a version of this show airs every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time around the world at CFRU.ca. Or if you're in the area, CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep the podcast going and view some t-shirts that I have both for sale and as gifts for people who make a monthly pledge. So please consider doing that. This episode would not be possible without our sponsors, Pizza Trocadero in Guelph. You can call them for pickup or delivery at 519-829-2444 or check them out at trocaderoguelph.ca. Also, The Bookshelf, an independently owned bookstore, bar, music venue, movie theater, located at 41 Quebec Street. That's in Guelph as well. Learn more about them at bookshelf.ca. And for some excellent, excellent coffee, Planet Bean Freshly Roasted, Fair Trade, Certified Organic Coffee. Visit planetbeancoffee.com for more information about how you, too, can taste some of the finest coffee in the world. That's it for another episode. More episodes to come. I hope you will go to all of the aforementioned podcast platforms and download episodes, subscribe to the podcast, follow us, like us, tell people to like us, tell your friends about the show, review the show, rate the show, all those things. It all helps. And other than that, I hope you're having a lovely summer. It's summertime where I am at this point in time and geography, so hopefully you're having a nice summer if it's summer where you are, and if not, hopefully your summer is coming soon. Anyway, I will talk to you very soon. Goodbye for now.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.